Okay, good evening, everybody. Tonight, it's Wednesday, April 15th, and we are together on Thursday night for our pre-Shabbat learning of Ramban Al HaTorah. And we have two Rambans tonight. They are pretty short-ish, and but they're thematic. They answer a question: why do people after specific experiences need to bring karbanot, specific types of karbanot, specifically when it comes to, well, let's look at the first one right now. This is a section dealing with a woman who gives birth. And after she gives birth, the Torah says that she has to bring a karban. She has to bring a karban, specifically a karban chatat. If you see here, oh, I have not been sharing my screen. I'm sorry about that. You're probably wondering what I'm talking about. Okay, so here we go. If you look here, after she has her child and a certain time has passed, the Torah says, "Tavi keves ben shnato leolah uven yona otor lechatat." Right, uven yona otor lechatat, to bring a young pigeon or a turtle dove as a sin offering. So that's an interesting question, right? Why would a pregnant woman have to bring a sin offering? Not a pregnant woman, a woman who gave birth. Why would she have to bring a sin offering? So, anyone want to take a stab at that? Suggest an answer why that would be? It's unexpected, I think, the
To
answer.
prevent the sin, probably, I don't know.
To
Maybe
what?
to prevent for the future or something, to prevent the
Well, the
sin.
Karban Chatat is brought for a sin that has been done.
Ah.
It's brought to achieve forgiveness for a sin that has been done. So we don't have prophylactic karbanot, although that would be a neat thing, right? We don't, in fact, that would not be Jewish, right? To say, well, it's what they used to have that in the church, right? Indulgences. We don't have indulgences that you're allowed to pay so that you could sin. We don't have that. So this is not an indulgence,
Maybe
although
some.
that'd be a brisk business. So what is it? What's going on here? So the Ramban answers the question. Fascinating, fascinating answer. Says the Ramban right here. Rabotenu Amru. Actually, I'm going to check one other place to see if it's available in English. To see if it's available in English. Just bear with me. This is Yud Bet Zion. Yud Bet Zion. Let's see if it's available in English. Yes, okay, here we go. I'll read it in Hebrew and translate it in English, and you see here's the English. Can you see the English on the right here? Can you all see this?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so here we go. Here's what the Ramban says as to why a woman who gave birth has to bring a karban chatat. It's really a fascinating answer. Okay, says the Ramban, and the women on this call who have had children could tell me if this is realistic. Rabotenu zichronam levracha amru, and the rabbis have said, and the place where this was said is in the Gemara in Masechet Nida, as follows: Bishashe korat leleid kofetzet v'nishbat lo eskak od lebaali. When a woman is giving birth to have her child and she's in pain, she says, "I will never again have relations with my husband. I'm never going through this again," she says. And so that, according to the Ramban, according to the Gemara, right, is the reason why she has to be a chatat. Now, this is not so simple because the fact that she brings a offering does not absolve her from fulfilling the oath, right? If she makes an oath like that, if she really makes such an oath that she's never going to be with her husband again, A karban chatat is not the mechanism by which to free her from that oath, right? So the Ramban is going to clarify what he means, because it doesn't mean straight out what it means. V'ikar ha-kavana. And so the Ramban says, the main reason, the main explanation of this rabbinic statement is as follows. Ki bavur shehi nishvat mitoch hatzar. Since she takes this oath under duress, right, on account of her pain, v'ein hashvua reuya shetitkayem ifnei hayota mishu'ubedet lebala. So the first is that an oath that's taken under duress is not binding. There's a Gemara in Masechet Nidarim that says that if you make a promise under duress, it's not binding. And furthermore, and the oath is not capable of being upheld because she has certain obligations to her husband, right? A husband and wife each have certain conjugal obligations towards each other. It's in the ketubah. At least the husband's obligations to the wife are in the ketubah, right? So this is not a legitimate oath, right? You can't make an oath against the halacha, right? So therefore, Ratzta haTorah lichaper la me'alot rucha. The Torah wanted to atone for her for that which came to her mind, for making an oath that she can't fulfill. Meaning, the oath in itself is void to begin with. But you're not supposed to make oaths that you can't fulfill. So the Torah says, okay, you made an oath that you can't fulfill, so that's why you should bring this karban chatat. That's why you should bring this sin offering. Umachshavot Hashem amukot v'rachamav nirubin shurotzeh lahatzdik briotam. And here we're saying that God's thoughts are deep and his mercy is great. He wanted to justify and make the woman here fully righteous, meaning there's generally no atonement necessary for violating a non-binding oath, right? She made an oath that's not binding, so if she violates it, what's the big deal? It's not an oath anyway. But maybe the woman would be feeling guilty, the husband would be feeling guilty. So in order to sort of restore the woman to feeling completely righteous and completely free of any guilt, God offers this sin offering in that vein. So it's very interesting, because technically speaking, it sounds like what the Ramban is saying is, if a woman says that, okay, what's the big deal? The oath is meaningless. She doesn't have to do anything. She made an oath against the halacha. It's not binding, and she could go on living life as normal. But she may feel bad. It's actually a little bit like what we talked about last week, where we talked about how Aaron felt so guilty after the golden calf that he couldn't take on the service in the Beit HaMikdash. Here, the woman is feeling maybe a little guilty. And so the Torah says, okay, here's a sin offering. Now, the truth is, the Torah makes everyone do this. It's not just for a woman who may have said such a thing. But in any case, this is what the Ramban says. So that's Ramban number one, right? So I want to know if this rings true, although maybe I don't want to hear too much at anyone.
I was going to say, what about women who are thinking of a lot of things while they're giving birth, but not that?
Okay, like?
I have to tell you, while a lot of people joked about that with me many, many times, I have to tell you, that is not something that crossed my mind during birth or after birth. So why would I have to come and give the offering?
Ah, okay, so this is the, can you hear me? My earbud fell out. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so this is the right. This is the Ramban. It may not be others. Others have different interpretations as to why a woman would have to bring a karban chatat. It's a good question. Maybe this is since some women might do this. Sometimes the Torah works on a low plug, right? Meaning Even though the rule may not apply to everybody, everybody gets the rule. Otherwise, it's hard to have a religion. And so here, she brings the she has to bring the chatat. You're muted, Carol.
Sorry, I was explaining to one of my children what we were discussing. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's okay. So it could be that that is the explanation as to why everyone has to do it. Okay. Let's look now at the second Ramban. The second Ramban is also a question about why a mitzora, in this case, someone who has biblical leprosy, has to bring karbanot. So this is in Perek Yud Dalid, Pasuk Yud Chet. So this is in 14:18. Okay, let me get it now up here in the English.
Also korban chatat, the mitzvah?
Pardon me?
Also korban chatat, the
mitzvah? So we'll see. We're going to see the mitzvah in a minute. We're not up to that yet. We're going to get to that. Okay. Okay, here we go. Okay, so the Ramban points out here that there are three karbanot that the mitzora has to bring. The Kohen brings them on behalf of the mitzora. The mitzora is someone who has tzarat. It's hard to translate tzarat. It's often translated as leprosy, but it's not leprosy. We can call it biblical leprosy, or we'll just call it tzarat. It's a skin ailment, which is essentially punishment, according to the Gemara, for lashon hara. And the Torah tells us three times that the Kohen has to provide atonement for the mitzora. It's in our Pasuk, and Pasuk 19, and Pasuk 20. So the question is, how much atonement through sacrifice does the mitzora require? And why does the mitzora require atonement at all? Those are the questions the Ramban is going to deal with in this context. He analyzes exactly what each of these atonements refers to. And here we go. Let's look at it right away. Okay, here we go. Says the Ramban, Vihine Amar HaKatuv. Ramban discusses the idea of atonement here. Vihine Amar HaKatuv. Be'asham v'chiper v'chazar v'amar v'chatat v'chiper ala mitaher mitumato. Scripture states here, in the case of the guilt offering, and the priest shall make atonement, and then states again in the case of the sin offering, and he shall make atonement for him, that is to be cleansed because of his uncleanliness, and with reference to the burnt offering and meal offering, it also states, and the priest shall make atonement for him, and he shall be clean. So you see that three times, the Kohen has to bring a karbon, which is in order to bring some sort of atonement for the mitzora. And the Ramban himself says, but we do not know the purport of all these expressions of atonement, right? We're not really clear what all of these, how many times does this poor mitzora need atonement? And so that's what the Ramban is trying to figure out. V'lo yadanu ma'inyan ha-kaparot halalu kulan. We do not know what all of these atonements are for. So then the Ramban goes on to explain. Ulai ha'asham yichaper al ma'alo asher ma'al kodem nig'o. So he says, perhaps the guilt offering, that's number one, affects atonement for the trespass that he committed before he was affected by the tzarat, before he was affected by his plague. Right, ulai ha'asham yichaper al malato asher ma'al kodem nig'o. The guilt offering atones for the betrayal by which he betrayed God before being punished with his affliction. So here, this guilt offering atones for a very serious sin. This guilt offering is a sin that was before. Meaning, yet the sin wasn't bad enough to get tzarat, but there was something before the tzarat. So that's number one, right? There was so this person you see is on a bad trajectory already, right? He did something which was bad enough to get him tzarat, but even before he did tzarat, he did something. He did a sin which requires some sort of repentance. He says, so the Rambam ascribes the Metzora's guilt offering to a severe sin beforehand. Okay, now next, the chatat al cheto asher chata bimei hanega, and the sin offering, right? The sin offering, and the sin offering affects atonement for his sin which he committed during the time of the plague. This is so interesting, right? He's already now is being punished for his sin, and he commits some sort of additional sin while he's already while he has tzarat. And what is this? Says the Ramban, ulai b'tza'aro natan tfila lelogim. Maybe because of his anguish, he ascribed something unseemly to God. He gets angry with God. Right? Why is God punishing? He gets angry with God for the punishment, right? Perhaps there's anguish. He cast aspersions against God for this injustice, right? And in some of the footnotes of some of the versions of the Ramban, he notes that the Ramban here is using language which is very similar to the language of that we find in Eov, in Job, where we note that throughout the entire time that Eov suffered agonies, he never spoke ill of God. And the Ramban here is suggesting that the special offering of atonement is just in case this person spoke ill of God. We're going to get back to that in a moment because I think that's worthy of commenting on. We'll get back to that. So that's two. So now we got one for a sin he did right before tzarat, two for a sin he did while he was suffering, right? And that's why it says, v'zetam mitumato. This is the meaning when it says that he will bring this and he will be cleansed from his contamination, meaning that while he's contaminated, he's going to be cleansed for the sin of cursing God because he feels that he's being treated unfairly. And finally, v'ha'ola v'ha'mincha, and the burnt offering and the meal offering. So now we have one set of offerings left. The burnt offering and the meal offering, says the Ramban, yihyu lo kofer nefesh sheyizke lihitaher v'lashuv lo halo. The burnt offering and the meal offering are so that he be worthy to be purified and return to his dwelling. Therefore, he said, and the priest shall make atonement for him, and he shall be clean. Meaning after he's already done with tzarat, there is some other requirement. He's attained atonement for his sins through the guilt offering and the sin offering that we just talked about. And the Metzora now has to bring a third sacrifice, which allows him re-entry, right? Which finishes the purification process and allows him re-entry into the camp. Those are the three. So it's a very neat package that the Ramban manages to figure out for us. Again, the question is, why three different karbanot in order for the Metzora to be able to enter back into the camp? So one is for the sin he did, which got him in trouble to begin with. Two is a sin he committed while he was in the clink already, right? While he was already punished and while he was already in quarantine, he gets angry with God and blames God. And number three is he goes through all the purification processes, but he needs to go through this additional ritual process to indicate that he's ready to get back into the camp. So two things I wanted to say on this. The first is regarding the last one, which is, so it sounds like he has to do something public right, in order to be permitted back into the camp. He's been banished to the camp because of Lashon Hara. He's been banished to the camp because he's done something damaging to the camp, right? The Gemara in Masechet Erechin says that the reason why he's banished is because he, by speaking Lashon Hara, he caused the split between a husband and wife. He caused a split between friends and colleagues, right? That's what Lashon Hara does. Lashon Hara is a community killer. So he has to, now, because he's a community killer, he's kicked out of the community. And you don't get the privilege of being in a community when you yourself are undermining the community. So you're out. So now to come back in, he has to do the sort of this public statement, I'm reform. I'm ready to come back in. I've learned my lesson, which is very interesting. It's an interesting consideration in terms of how we think about criminal justice and what gives someone the right to enter back into society after they've been removed from society. Some sort of grand gesture, maybe, would be an interesting idea, not only because it shows the people that the person is interested, but it may have some sort of positive effect on the transgressor themselves, that they do something and they actually then start to believe it, right? They do something to show that they want to come back into the community. And when sometimes you do something, you actually believe it, right? And so, which is a classic educational approach in Judaism, where we say, even if you don't believe in certain things, do certain rituals because they represent certain things. And hopefully through doing them, you will come to believe them. So maybe that's what's going on here as well. What really touched me was the second point of the Ramban, which is this idea that there's a certain amount of mercy and understanding that the Torah has for this person when they blaspheme God, essentially, right, while they're in pain. Right, the person suffering from tzarat, and they curse God, and they blame God, and they say God is unjust, and that person gets a get out of jail free card by bringing the karban. Now, I imagine some sort of internal change is important too, but this is very understanding of human vulnerability when we are under duress and in pain. I thought that was really an interesting point that the Ramban makes. Rabbi Soloveitchik made this point in an essay that was recently published. I'm sorry, in an essay he wrote about Megillat Esther, which I thought was really moving. He says the whole point of Megillat Esther is to teach us that that the world is always very shaky, right? In one minute the Jews are sitting pretty in Shushan, the next minute Haman comes around and poof, we're about to be massacred, and then another moment goes by and the Jews are on top of the world again, right? The world is very, it's hard to figure out, and we are vulnerable. And Rabbi Soloveitchik says, not only is the nation vulnerable, but individuals are vulnerable. And he says the whole idea, this is actually perfect for this, is the whole idea of forgiveness for sin is based on this, that human beings are weak. We are weak. We are vulnerable. We are eagerly we stray easily, we are influenced easily, but that's also our, like I said, that's our get out of jail free card. That is our saving grace. Literally, that's our saving grace, because God realizes that He made us of weak character sometimes, and so therefore He has to forgive us. And that's what's going on here, I think. Despite the seriousness of the sin, this individual is given an opportunity to rehabilitate themselves, even though they've done something really bad, which is to essentially question God's fairness. Now, of course, the Midrashim are full of rabbis who question God, and you know, Avram questioned God, but here we have something explicit where the Ramban says, and there's an antidote. And the Torah, the antidote is built into the Torah itself. That's what I found to be very, very powerful about this Ramban. Okay, so two Rambans about why Karbanot. One, why a woman has to bring a Karban Chatat, because she may have made some inadvertent remarks about her future with her husband. And so the Torah wants to remove any lingering guilt she may have from that void promise, that void oath, and the three karbanot that to be brought on behalf of the Metzorah, and this idea that the Torah understands that we are vulnerable, especially when we are in pain. That's the key, because the Ramban says that. He says, for perhaps in his anguish, and the Hebrew, the word the Hebrew I thought was better. The Hebrew used here don't necessarily have to translate it as anguish. It was, could have been translated another way as well. See if I could find the Hebrew real quick. Al chatato, ulai bitsa'aro, right? Sa'aro is distress, anguish, tsar, right? The person is distressed because of the situation that they're in, and therefore they get this sort of get out of jail free card. I want to see how this English translates. Also, anguish. So anguish, distress, pain. The Torah appreciates that and gives us a chance to get out of it. Okay, my dear friends, that's it. I wish you all a Shabbat Shalom. Share these words of Torah at your Shabbos table sometime over Shabbat. And you could all poll your friends if they've made any such oaths on the birthing stool. And I'd love to hear if anyone wants to back up the Ramban here. All right. See you soon, I hope. Have a good night, everybody. Thanks for joining. Always a pleasure. Shalom uvracha. Shalom.